All right, we're recording. I think dice aquí record. It's February the 2nd, 1998. Estamos in Crystal City, 519 East Uvalde. Right?
Right. But and it's May the 2nd.
May the 2nd. ¿Qué dije?
February the 2nd.
Ah, pues sí. Guadalupe Hidalgo. we're interviewing Jose O. Mata. The sound effects is Damian Mata's son, who is a singing recording artist. And we have another son here on the side. We'll capture him in a minute, Gerardo. Damian is Gerardo singing, Damian is sitting. And Mrs. Mata is walking around getting another chair. We're going to do a little interview to find out just who is Jose O. Mata, all the things you've done here in Crystal City, all your political involvement, your family. So why don't we start there? Why don't you tell me a little bit about the Mata family, who your parents are, where they came from, when, their names, brothers, sisters, and then your own family, and who your wife is, where she come from, and your early childhood, if you can remember all of that.
Well, I don't know if I'm going to do it in that category, but I'll try. I'm a lifelong resident of Cristal. I was born and raised here in Cristal, and so is my wife. And so is my kids, except for one that was born in Fort Sill, Oklahoma, which is my oldest son. My parents, they are originally from Mexico. My father was born in Durango, Durango. My mother was born in Torreon, Coahuila, Mexico. And they came here long before I was born. So I don't know their childhood. So I know that they came over to the United States early in the 1900s.
Was that because of the Mexican Revolution?
Well, after the Mexican Revolution, they came over to the United States. And we all was born here in the United States. I've got 8 brothers and 2 sisters. One of the sisters has passed away, and one of my brothers has passed away. And all of us, was born and raised here in Cristal. And except for 2 of us that still live here in Cristal, some of them migrated up north and ended up living in northern states like North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, and Iowa. And just me and another brother still live here in Cristal, and I have another brother that lives in Carrizo Springs. My wife's parents were born here in the United States, and she was born here in Cristal. And she's also got a sister that have lived here in Cristal, but since they was married, they moved over to Carrizo, and another one moved over to Victoria. But all her sisters live here in the city of Texas. I'm almost 51 years old. May 15th will be my birthday. This May, I'll be 51 years old, or 51 years young. And I have been a lifelong resident of Cristal. I started off in my early life as a migrant worker.
Before you go any further, can you give us the names of your parents and the names of your brothers and sisters?
Yes, my father's name was Miguel Mata, Miguel Montes Mata. My mother's name was Cruz Ortega Mata. And my oldest brother's name is Genaro Mata. Then Candelario Mata, Eva Mata, Miguel Mata Jr., Adán Mata, myself, Jose Mata, Cruz Mata, my brother, Enrique Mata, Teresa Mata, and the youngest one of us, his name is Esteban Mata. It should be 8 brothers and 2 sisters.
And so you were born in 1947?
1947, May 15th, 1947.
All right, it's also election day. Some of the sound truck and effect in the background is a sound truck going around saying political encouragement to vote. That's what the background is, just for explanation. Uh-huh. You were starting to say that you've been a migrant all your life. Can you remember those early childhoods? Where did you all migrate, why, so on?
Well, it's hard to explain the reason why. I know that I was born in the migrant stream. When I was born, according to my mom, 5 days later, I was on the road to Minnesota. And I grew up in the migrant fields. up until the age that I was drafted into the Army, I had been always, you know, year after year after year, we had gone to Minnesota. From Minnesota, we'd go to the state of Wisconsin, pick pickles. From Wisconsin, we'd come back to West Texas over cotton fields. From West Texas, we'd come back to Cristal. And we wind up coming back to Cristal in the latter part of November. Usually that was the route and the tradition. We'd leave in the early part of May and come back in the latter part of November.
Did you ever get behind in school?
Well, I guess you could say we did, but in a sense, my mom and dad always thought that we should always try to go to school, so they didn't know what really was going on in schools, but they would put us in schools in North Dakota, and Minnesota, and Wisconsin. And I'm talking about 30 years, I don't know, 40 years away, 40 years back, there was a lot of racism, a lot of discrimination. But my parents insisted that we go to school wherever we was at. So if we was in Minnesota, they'd send us to school in Minnesota. If we was in Wisconsin, they'd send us to school in Wisconsin. If we was in West Texas, they'd send us to school in West Texas. And that way we weren't too far behind, but we were behind in school all the time, because we'd miss school in between trips.
Were you tracked into a migrant program?
Excuse me?
Were you tracked into a migrant program?
Well...
Were there any Anglos in your classrooms?
In my classrooms, there was all Anglos, except for us, when we were in schools in Minnesota and in North Dakota and Wisconsin. In those classes, there's nothing but Anglos, except for us. And a lot of us migrant families, they didn't put their children in school. We did. My mom and dad, they put us in school. But a lot of us migrant families didn't put their children in school until they came back to Cristal.
And here, were there any Anglos in your classroom?
Yes. In my early childhood, there were some Anglos in the classroom. I would say maybe 70 Mexicanos, 30 gringos.
You said there was a lot of discrimination and racism. Can you give us examples? What happened to you, or what do you remember?
Well, I remember, you know, like when we went to the cafeteria, for example, we'd get pushed around. Since it was just us as Mexicanos, we'd get pushed around, we'd get pushed out of line, we'd get pushed out to the end, we'd complain to the teacher, and she'd just tell us, get back in line, and put us back in line. In the school, you know, we'd ask for help, and they asked us to speak correctly in English. And of course, we couldn't speak correctly in English because we were Spanish dominant. That sort of discrimination.
Did you ever join Little League or Boy Scouts? Did you ever have time for that?
Well, I remember I wanted to join baseball when I was in school in North Dakota, Minnesota. But they always told me that I didn't qualify because I wasn't there all year and night. I just didn't qualify. I came back to Cristal and the same thing. I didn't qualify because I was a migrant worker and I wasn't here full time.
What kind of crops did you all work?
We worked in the sugar beets. We worked in the soybeans, cleaning soybeans. We worked in baling hay. We worked in the pickle fields. We worked in the tomato fields. We worked in the potato fields, picking potatoes, picking tomatoes. We worked in the cotton fields, picking cotton. We worked picking onions. In Cristal, spinach, onions, carrots, lettuce, tomatoes, potatoes.
Now here in Cristal, when did you work? After school or on Saturdays?
Well, me, it was a special situation because my mom and dad separated when I was about 12 or 13 years old. So I was the oldest at that time when they got separated, and I had three brothers and one sister younger than me. My mother, she was illiterate. She couldn't read or write, and she was always she was very unhealthy. She was always sick, so she couldn't work. And then being illiterate made it hard for her to find a job.
That's the sound truck in the background. Well, wait a minute. Okay, what were you saying?
Well, being illiterate, my mother was, she had a hard time to find a job, per se. So she was just a housewife. All her life, she was a housewife. And when they got separated, you know, it was my responsibility, being the oldest son, unmarried son, that I had to take care of the family. So I was only 13, I believe, 12 or 13. So I wound up going to school in the daytime and going to work at the nighttime. I often worked at the Del Monte Canning Factory here in Cristal at night, and when I wasn't working at Del Monte, I would be irrigating in the fields at night here in the local fields also. So it was kind of hard. Eventually I had to drop out when I was in probably the ninth grade.
So you didn't graduate?
No, I didn't graduate. I later, got my GED I couldn't graduate.
Who was the first one in your family to graduate from high school?
None of us graduated.
None. All right. Well, you said that you were a migrant and you worked. Now you've dropped out. Why did you join the military? What brought that on?
I'm sorry. I stand corrected. I have a brother that graduated. I have two brothers that graduated, and my sister, younger than me. When I went to work and I finally had to drop out of school, I didn't want them to drop out of school, so I continued working, and they eventually graduated. All the brothers younger than me graduated. I was working and they were going to school, and they eventually graduated.
So you were what, 15, 16?
Yes.
About that time?
I was about 14, 15 at that time when I started to work.
Were you acting like the head of the household by then?
I was the head of the household at that time, at the age of about 14, 15.
But were you drafted? What made you leave and leave your mother alone and your younger brothers and go into the military?
Well, I was drafted. I was drafted into the United States Army.
At 18?
At age 20.
20?
At 20. I was drafted in July 12th of 1967. I had just turned 20.
Were you married by then?
I had been married for about 6 weeks when I was drafted.
Well, why don't we just pick that little piece up? Who did you marry? Who is she? What are her family like? And your family, what children do you have? And then we get back to the draft.
Well, I had been married for about 6 weeks when I was drafted, and I married, my wife's name is Beatriz Hernandez, now Beatriz Hernandez Mata. She is also a lifelong resident of Cristal. She's lived all her life. She was born here in Cristal. And we have four children, three boys and one girl. I have two of them that are married, my oldest two sons, son and daughter. And I have four grandkids already. My son's name is Jose Mata Jr., he's the oldest. And then next to him is Maribel Mata. And then Gerardo, and then Damian. Damian is our baby. He's already 15 years old. And then we have four grandchildren, three with Maribel, and one granddaughter with Chepito, with Jose Mata Jr., we call him Chepito. He's got one daughter, she's 6 years old. And then Maribel has one daughter and two sons, which is Laura Cassandra, my granddaughter, and then my grandsons are Noé y Omar. And they're, Laura Cassandra is 6 years old, and Noé is 4 years old, and Omar is 2 years old today.
How did you meet Beatriz? What made you marry her?
Well, I met Beatriz first time I saw Beatriz was downtown, walking along there was a railroad track running down the city, which is no longer here. But the very first time I saw Beatriz, she was walking along the railroad track, and immediately I knew that I had to talk to her. I didn't get a chance to talk to her till about 4 or 5 months later, when we were both working in the fields. So actually, I guess I could say that we actually met in the fields, working in the fields, picking onions. Those are political announcements that are going on right now because it's election day, and Bess will be here in the background.
All right, so where were these fields? Was it Minnesota or South Dakota?
No, they were here in Cristal. I believe the very first time that we met was in an onion field, and started talking. It was in onion fields here in Cristal at the Wagner Farms. We were both working, chopping onions. And from there, our relationship started. Next time we got together was at a quinceañera. And our relationship started then, and about a year and a half later, we got married.
Those railroad tracks that you mentioned back then, was that what divided the town, where the Mexicans lived and where the Anglos lived?
Well, not really. What really divided mostly the town was, that's correct. In the early years, in the early 50s, the middle 50s, I guess, the railroad tracks were pretty much what divided the Mexican from the Anglos. Mexicans lived on the west side of town, and the Anglos lived on the east side of town. I was trying to say that the 7th Avenue, but this is nowadays, 7th Avenue is what divides Cristal from what little left Anglo community there is.
Well, what was the address where you were born and raised?
I was born in, the address where I was born was 602 West Crockett Street. And that is what is now Juan Garcia Park. We got relocated from there because that was a flood area, a flood prone area. And we got thrown out of our house on at least 4 different occasions that I remember, because our house got completely flooded up to the roof. So we had to evacuate several times from that area.
And of course, there was no insurance, and you lost all your belongings?
We lost all our
every
belongings.
Time?
What little belongings we had, we lost.
And how many people were around you? Were there houses next door? Was a big barrio there?
Oh, yeah, it was a big barrio, a regular-sized community. You know, the barrio was there. But I would venture to say it was about, maybe about 100 families that eventually got relocated into another area in town.
During these floods, do you remember if you all got any assistance?
I only remember one time that the Red Cross came in and gave assistance. The rest of the times, I don't recall ever getting any assistance. But I do remember that there was one time that the Red Cross came in and helped with food and clothing. And some families got some stoves, and some families got a refrigerator, stuff like that.
So when you asked Beatriz to marry you, did y'all do it the traditional way? Did somebody go ask for her to her parents? And were you already drafted? Did you know you were leaving?
No. When I asked Beatriz to marry me, I didn't have a father that I could ask to go ask for her hand in marriage. So I told her that I was going to go and ask for her hand in marriage, to talk to her father, and to try to set up a date so that I could go to talk to him. She later came back and told me that her parents didn't want to talk to me, and they didn't want her to marry me. I think that what they thought was that since my father had left my mother, I was going to do the same thing with her. And another thing was that they saw that I had no, or they thought that I had no future. I was a migrant. I was going nowhere. I had no steady job. I had no education. So they just didn't want me for a son-in-law. So eventually we eloped. And we got married.
Did you already know you were being drafted?
No, not at that time. I had an idea that I was going to be drafted, but I wasn't sure that I was going to be drafted. And 6 weeks later, after we got married, I was drafted. I was drafted. We got married on May the 15th on my birthday, and I was drafted in July 12th.
Where did you live in those 6 weeks of marriage? At her house or your house? Or?
No, we lived in my house. We were just planning on looking for a house when I got my notice. So at that time, we made an agreement that she was either going to stay with my mom or her mom. So she stayed some time with my mom and then some time with her mom.
Well, tell me what was very significant about the military, or your biggest disappointments, or your problems or successes. What happened in the military?
Well, I served 1 year here in the States. I took basic training here in Fort Lewis. No, I took basic training in Fort Polk, Louisiana. And then I took advanced training in Fort Sill, Oklahoma. And then from there, they shipped me over to Fort Lewis, Washington. And I stayed there for about 6 months. During that period of time, our first son was born, Chepito Jose Mata Jr. And then when I was in Fort Lewis, Washington, we got orders to go to Vietnam. By then I had almost completed 1 year in the States, and I had 1 year left, and I was drafted for 2 years. So I spent that other year in Vietnam. And, well, Vietnam is another story. And, you know, something that I really don't like to discuss, Vietnam. You know, it's something I want to forget.
Okay, did you get your GED there?
No, I got my GED when I got out of the Army. When I got out of the Army, I came back to Cristal, and that first year we got back into the migrant stream for 1 year. When I was in the migrant stream for that year after I got out of the Army, I told my wife, this is going to be the last year we're going to be migrants. We're going to stay home, and we're going to make a living at our city. One way or the other, we're going to have to make it. We're going to have to show our kids that, you know, the migrant field is not the only route for Mexicanos.
You were 22, 23?
I was 22 years old, almost 23 by then. And we came back, we got back from Minnesota, came to Cristal. I started taking classes in Eagle Pass to get my GED. And finally got my GED, and then I started taking some correspondence courses for business administration. And I guess I completed about 30 hours of business administration. And I could no longer take it. I just, you know, it was just too hard. We had to work and classes, and I just couldn't take it anymore. So I didn't finish the course in business administration. So that's all I've got. That's all the education I got.
Well, I don't want to skip anything important, but I know that eventually you got involved in politics here. What brought that on, or were you active already before through your parents or through friends, or how did you become involved in your community?
Well, when I got back from Vietnam, I got back in Vietnam in May of 1969, and I had a 54-day early out, because when I was in Vietnam, my daughter died. I had a daughter die. When I left, my wife was pregnant, and she had a baby when I was in Vietnam. And that baby that she had died when I was in Vietnam. So when it died, I had 54 days left in Vietnam, and they let me go. So instead of getting out in July, I got out in May. In May 29th of 1969. When I got out in May, as soon as I got to Cristal, I saw that there was a lot of activity going on as far as political things are concerned. There was a new movement that had been started, which had just been started in 1969. There was a walkout going on, and it was all very interesting to me, and I wanted to get involved. I wanted to find out more about it, because this is something that I had been dream enough, you know, something that would give not only me but my children and the rest of the Mexicanos the pride to be Mexicanos, pride to be who we are. And now knowing that there was this movement going on, I started getting involved, finding out what it was about. I later found out there was a committee called Ciudadanos Unidos de Cristal that was being formed. And I started getting involved in committee, Ciudadanos Unidos. When I started getting involved, I guess I really got deep into it because I started getting into committees, got elected to the board of the directors of the Ciudadanos Unidos, and finally I got into elected into a position of the Crystal City Independent School District in 1972. By then, by 1972, when I got
before you began your school board race, do you remember the first Crystal City Revolt in 1963? What were you doing then, or what did you think of at that time?
In 1963, I think I was about 15 years old, and I remember very little about it. I was very young at that age, and I wasn't thinking much about politics. I remember that Juan Cornejo was one of the individuals that was leading that revolt, along with Mario Hernandez, Cárdenas, I forget the other individuals. I think it was a slate of five that entered the city council at that time, I believe.
Did you ever go to any rallies or any meetings when you were 15?
No, I don't recall ever being active in those revolts.
Okay, well, how did you become a candidate? Why did you want to do that?
Well, when I got involved with Ciudadanos Unidos, I found out that what Ciudadanos Unidos wanted was simply equality and justice for all. And for all meant nosotros también, us also as Mexicanos. And that's what I wanted. You know, I wanted an opportunity for my kids to be treated right in school and in society. I didn't want to be a second-class citizen, as we had always, you know, been treated like. And I felt that this was the opportunity to do something about it. So when Ciudadanos Unidos had a meeting and asked, me if I wanted to be a candidate, be considered as a candidate for school board, I accepted. I accepted, and that's how I wound up being elected to the board of the Independent School District.
Who ran along with you?
It was me and Ernesto Lin, and we both won that election.
Can you tell me what you think the importance of Ciudadanos Unidos was?
Well, to me, it has been the most important thing in Cristal. Ciudadanos Unidos had the impact of changing the entire political structure of Cristal, whether you hear different stories from different people. To me, that's what it is. You know, we changed, or Ciudadanos Unidos, along with the people that are involved with it, we changed the school board from Anglo to Mexicanos. We changed the city council. We changed the commissioner's court. We changed the county judge, which had for years and years and years throughout history had been an Anglo. And Ciudadanos Unidos was the first county judge, Mexicano.
What did you do on the school board? What do you think was your biggest accomplishment and your biggest disappointment?
Well, when I got into the school board, one of the things that I remembered was that we had been very much discriminated against because there were very little Mexicanos teachers at that time. So one of my interests was to have Mexicano teachers. Secondly, one of my other interests was to have better schools, because we were teaching our kids in old Japanese concentration camp barracks. That's what were our schools for our kids, and I wanted to see if we could have better schools, better teaching environment for our teachers and for our students. We eventually accomplished some of the goals. We got new schools. We got a lot of Mexicano teachers into the district. We started a bilingual program. And we got a Mexicano superintendent. And I guess those are some of the things that I really feel proud of.
What was your biggest disappointment?
Well, there were several on the list, but I guess the biggest disappointment was during the period of time that some of these things were happening, Ciudadanos Unidos was active in most of them, and we got a lot of leadership from people involved in Ciudadanos Unidos, and we got a lot of advice from people involved in Ciudadanos Unidos, even though we were the board of directors in the Crystal City Independent School District. Community-wise, Ciudadanos Unidos was a voice of the people. And one of my biggest disappointments was when Ciudadanos Unidos got dissolved, per se, or divided. And it was because I believe, because, you know, greed started coming in.
How did you win? How did you campaign? How did you make it happen?
Well, I was not a born politician. I was not born into politics because none of my family members ever got involved in politics. I was the first one in my family to become a político. So I guess I learned by Ciudadanos Unidos. And one of the things that I did was, you know, just grassroots, started walking the streets, talking to people, and organizing rallies, organizing meetings, organizing community meetings in barrios, different barrios. We would meet and have a little pachanga and talk to people and ask for the support. And I guess that's what really did it.
How much money did you spend?
I guess in my campaigns, I don't think I spent more than $500. Because well, at that time, people had an interest. People had a cause to fight for, you know, they wanted a change. They wanted their people to be proud. They wanted their kids to have something to be proud of. So at that time, people wouldn't say, you know, how much are you gonna give me for gas, or how much are you gonna pay me if I help you to do this? People would volunteer. People would walk the streets for you. People would take people to vote in their cars, and they would pay for their own gas. You know, you wouldn't have to make those expenses. There were some ladies that would make tacos for the people that were walking streets on their own. They would buy their own food and then make their own tacos and deliver the tacos to the people. And that would be for free. You know, they wouldn't be charging anybody for it. So that's why, you know, the candidates at that particular time wasn't spending that much money, because it was a community effort to get that person elected.
What role did the women play in all of this?
I guess as much a role as a man did. They was very involved, and I have to say that Las Mujeres de Cristal played the biggest role in the politics of Cristal, because if it had not been for the tremendous amount of work that the women did, as far as not only campaigning, but the support that they gave either their husbands or their sons or daughters was tremendous. They would go out for them, they would walk the streets for them, they would campaign. They did everything that the candidate would do.
Were they candidates also?
Oh yes, we got women elected to the school board, we got women elected as county commissioners, we got women elected as city council women, we got women as mayors, and they were very active. They were very active.
You said a little while ago that Ciudadanos Unidos produced a lot of leadership. Let me ask you, what is leadership to you?
It's, well, I guess you could different people could define it in different ways. But to me, I guess leadership would be making the right decision. And it would take somebody with a lot of experience to make that right decision. And Ciudadanos Unidos had a vast amount of different types of experiences in its organization. We had migrant workers, of course. Most of us were migrant workers. But we had people that were college graduates also. And together, in an effort combined to better our community, ideas were brought up that were good ideas. And that, to me, was what we were looking for. That is the leadership that we were looking for. We were looking for betterment. We were looking for the people that had those good ideas. We were looking for not that only had good ideas, but ideas that would work. Ideas that were real, not something that was out of grab. And I guess Ciudadanos Unidos had that type of leadership because we not only talked about doing things, things were done. Streets were improved, new houses were built, new schools were built, health centers were built. All of that was done through efforts that were initiated by Ciudadanos Unidos. Eventually those ideas got into the school board, those ideas got into the commissioner's court, those ideas got into the board of directors for the health center, to the city council, and they got done. But the leadership came through Ciudadanos Unidos.
How old were you when you were elected?
22, I believe.
Did you run for re-election?
Yes.
Were you re-elected?
Yes.
So you served two terms?
Yes, sir.
6 years?
6 years in the school board.
How was the second term different than the first one?
Well, in the first term, I was just starting to learn what the school board was about and what could and could not be done. And I was a school board member. During my second term, last 2 years of my second term, I was elected the board president. And that was entirely different because that put a lot of more strain in me and a lot more responsibility as the president of the school board. So I guess that was the biggest difference.
How much time did you spend on the school board work and politics?
Well, I guess I can say that it was at that time, at those years, we were meeting 2, 3, 4 times per week. And I remember some of the meetings lasting up to 3 o'clock in the morning. In the morning, a.m. Sometimes, I remember one time that we were waiting to have a quorum, and we were waiting for this board member to get home, and he didn't get home till about 2 o'clock in the morning. So we had somebody waiting there for him at his house so that he could be brought to the school board meeting so that we could establish a quorum so that we could take action on things that we had to take action on. I forget what those items were that we needed to take action, but we were so dedicated to doing what we had to do that, you know, it didn't matter how long we had to stay at meetings. We were really, you know, even though I may be bragging, but we were really dedicated and interested in making a change.
Well, if you spend all that time and they don't pay you on the school board, how did you make a living? Where did you work?
I was, during that time that I was in the school board, by that time I believe I was working in 1972, I was working for a mental health agency here in Cristal. It was, you know, I was working from Monday through Friday, and our meetings were all of our meetings mostly were at night after 7. Once in a while we would meet during the daytime when there was a need to it for it, but mostly our meetings were during the night. So I would work during the day, and we had our meetings, conducted our meetings during the evenings.
How did your wife help you, and what did she think about all this?
Well, had it not been for her, probably I would not, never have been involved in politics. But she felt like I did. She was there for me all the time. She supported everything I did. She believed in everything that I did and that we did in Ciudadanos Unidos. And that's really what got me through it.
All right, well, after the school board, the second term, what happened? What did you do then? Because I know you continue to be involved.
Yes, I was, I forget the year, you know, it's been some time ago, but during those period of the years, I was also elected as the Presidente de Ciudadanos Unidos, President of Ciudadanos Unidos, and we continued to be involved in politics, and I later got asked considered to be a candidate for the city council. I accepted being a candidate for the city council and ran for the city council and won. And I also served, I believe, 2 terms in the city council.
What years were these?
This was in 1982, I believe. 1982 through 1986. And the in my last term, my last elected term, I got to serve as the mayor of the city of Crystal City.
So that was, what, in 84, 85, 86?
85, I believe.
85. How was that different than the school board?
Well, it's different, really, because the school board deals mostly with educational programs and educating our children. And the city is mostly other type of programs that needs to be developed for the betterment of our community. We need to improve our water system, improve our gas system, improve our street department, improve our streets, and of course try to tap into any type of federal programs you get into, so that you can get assistance for your budget. We were lucky to have been able to also work with the city, to also work with the Centro de Salud Health Center, so that they could also get some funding, additional funding for their program. And working together with the health center, they eventually got extra monies to add on to their health center.
I know that you became the first Mexican-American road administrator, the first Chicano to head up all the county employees. When was that, and what was that like?
Well, that was in 1975 that I was appointed as the Zavala County Road Administrator. And we had, I had about, I think about 35 employees under me, and they were divided into three separate groups. One being in La Pryor, another being in Batesville, and the third one being here in Crystal City, because it entailed the whole county of Zavala that we had to upgrade and maintain. So that was a different job for me, because I had when I started getting into the stream of working with programs, I had been working with sort of social programs, and then when I got into the health department, it was a maintenance program. We had to upkeep the county roads, the county bridges, the whole works. And I had to come back and report to the county commissioners and follow the directives, whatever they wanted to employ in their particular precincts.
How many men did you supervise, and about how much money did you have as a budget? Do you remember?
I think my budget was $250,000 for the entire department.
Remember how many employees you had?
I think it was about 35. I don't remember exactly, but it was around 30 or 35.
Let me go back to city council race. You said that Ciudadanos Unidos divided, dissolved, so I guess it didn't exist when you ran for city council. How did you campaign then, or what happened? What were the politics like at that time?
Well, by then, I believe that the Ciudadanos Unidos had already been divided and almost completely dissolved, but the people were there. The grassroots people that had helped us be in the elected offices were still there, and were still willing to work. So, knowing the strength, knowing how to go about it, I started having my own meetings here in my own home and talking to people here. And from here, started working my campaign. And this was my campaign headquarters here at home. And we would meet here, and from here we would go out and walk the streets.
How many people were involved in Ciudadanos Unidos? When were the meetings, and what were they like? What went on?
It was about, I would say about 200 people. When we had a good meeting, it was about 200 people present. And what went on at the Ciudadanos Unidos meeting was that we discussed issues like education, what we needed at school. Parents would talk about what had gone on or what had transpired with the children in their house, what had gone on in schools, what they felt needed to be done at the schools. They would talk about the housing authority, what needed to be done in the housing authority, what had happened in housing authority, how funds were being divided at the housing authority, what people would go in into, what type of qualifications people needed to get into the housing authority. They would talk about issues concerning the county, what type of programs the county commissioners needed to work on.
Is your chair going to be okay there, or are you going to fall? Or?
No, that's fine. And they would talk about the city, the utilities, what kind of rates we're going to be charging. The whole shebang. They would talk about everything dealing with the city and county and school.
Were these meetings during the day, at night, during the week,
no,
weekend?
They would be held during the day on Sundays.
On Sunday?
On Sundays.
And you had that many people there?
Yep. We had, I guess, the lowest amount of people that we would generally get would be maybe 60 or 70. But mostly we would get around 200 people in there.
Well, I know that Ciudadanos Unidos was the foundation, but they built a political party, the Raza Unida Party.
Right.
Why did you all do that? What was the importance of that?
Well, Ciudadanos Unidos was the political vehicle in Cristal. But we wanted a statewide political vehicle. And when the idea was brought up by what we considered our leader in politics, by Jose Angel Gutierrez, to create our own political party, which was La Raza Unida, we went for it. And we got to have statewide candidates.
All right, well, finishing the term, two terms on the city council, did you quit politics? Did you get disenchanted, or what happened? I know that there was a period there, or maybe even till today, maybe you're not involved, or what happened?
Well, after I got elected on my second term in the city council, I, on the third term that I was running for re-election, I didn't get elected. I lost by 56 votes. And I'll always say that I lost to the Del Monte Canning Factory, not to my opponent, because Del Monte Canning Factory, they put out a lot of money to get me off the city council, because I wanted to get them annexed into the city so that they could pay city taxes. And they didn't want to get annexed into the city, so they made big contributions to my opponent, and he won. He defeated me in my bid for re-election.
Who was that?
Ventura Gonzalez. And after that, I had never ran for election again. However, I continued for, for about 6 years active in politics, but not as a candidate or not directly involved, but having meetings here in my home or talking to people at their own meetings, still being active.
Now, Ventura Gonzalez had been on the city council before.
Yes.
And is he your compadre?
Yes, he's my compadre.
And y'all were together one time, so why would he oppose you? Why would he switch sides?
I really don't know. I would rather not comment on that. I don't know.
Okay.
But I do know that he opposed me. We were very good friends. He was my compadre. He is my compadre. And at that particular time, after that, after he defeated me, I went and I told him that I accepted my defeat and that I congratulated him, and did it on the loudspeaker, and I told him that I was there to help him in any way I could. After that, he didn't speak to me for a couple of years, and then he just decided to talk to me again, and then and we're pretty good friends now again.
Well, this is 1998. And this must be about 1986, 85?
Yes.
Catch me up there in that decade almost, those 10 years that lapsed. You said you still remained active. How? What did you do, or what are you doing now?
Well, there's still, like always, there will be city council meetings, school board meetings, county commission meetings. And I attend those meetings, and I guess because of my involvement during the past 20 years in politics, or 25 years, they pretty much consider my suggestions when I speak at the city council meetings, when I speak at the county commissioners meetings, or when I speak at school board meetings. Suggestions such as, why our rates are going so high, why is our garbage rates going so high, why are we transferring our garbage disposal from one area to another, sort of things of that nature that, just as an example, they pretty much consider what I have to say, and that they consider that I'm still pretty actively involved in politics, because a lot of people still come to talk to me about who's going to be running, who am I going to be running again, and things of that nature.
How are the politics different today than they were back when Ciudadanos Unidos was active?
They are completely different. And I'll say again, when Ciudadanos Unidos was active in politics, the people in Cristal had a cause. They knew what they wanted, and it was community oriented. It was not a self-enticing thing. It was community oriented. The people wanted something for Cristal. Not for me. They wanted something for Cristal, for our future. Now, it's different. Now, the idea is not so much as, and that's my personal opinion, not so much as what's going to be done for Cristal, but what am I going to benefit out of it? And that's what's different. That's the biggest difference in politics of today, of politics of Ciudadanos Unidos.
What price have you paid for all this activism?
Excuse me?
What price have you paid for all this activism? What does it cost you and your family?
Well, I guess the biggest price that I have paid is depriving my family of time, a valuable time. I don't know if I could go back into time, if I would do things different. Probably wouldn't. But the biggest deprivation that that was suffered was by my family, by my wife, and by my kids, deprived of the quality time that I could have given them, and instead I gave it to el movimiento. I say that probably would do the same, because those things needed to be done. And like everything else, I guess when something good's gotta happen, somebody's gotta sacrifice something. And I guess time for my family was what I had to sacrifice. Eventually, it has its price. It has its price because, well, you know, you can't talk about stories of like other parents can or other fathers can say, and well, you know what I did this weekend? I went fishing with my kids. You know, we went out to the lake and we went fishing. What did you do? Well, you know, I was walking the streets campaigning. But who benefits and who suffers is, who benefits is the city at the expense of the time that you deprived your family of. And to me, that was the biggest deprivation, which has its consequences, because I don't know how to put it in English, but my father had a saying that said, no vayas a ser el candil de la calle y oscuridad en tu casa, which meant don't be the light in the street and the darkness in your home. And I guess that's exactly what I did, because I was trying to make a change. And I guess to a certain extent I made my contribution, but it had its toll, you know, because I know that my kids have never told me directly in my face, but I know that they've told friends that I never took them anywhere. And it's, you know, it's got its price.
Do you ever feel like you wanted to quit?
Sometimes I did, but luckily I never did. Until recently, I've mellowed down, I guess. I guess age is cashing with me.
Well, but I just heard you not long ago talking, overheard your conversation talking to a candidate and some other people, and you either already are doing this or you're going to do it. But I heard you saying you were forming a political committee. What is all that about?
Well, like I said before, the politics of today is completely different of the politics of the 70s and 80s, because we knew what we wanted at that time, and now it's completely different, because you know it's what's in it for me, and this is not my type of politics. My type of politics is what's in it for us, for Cristal, for our people. And it's not happening today. And that's why I have more or less decided that I am going to organize a committee. And it's going to be a political committee, because I have been or tried to be recruited to serve in the American Legion, to serve in the Lions Club, to serve in the Chamber of Commerce. But those committees don't want to get involved in politics. And according to them, there's no place for politics in their committees. And politics to me is what makes a change in a community. And it's the biggest power structure that there is in any community. And unless we have some kind of a not a control, but a group that will keep you on your toes. You're free to do anything you want, and that's what's happening right now. You know, there is no committee that approaches candidates. There is no committee that will go to city council meetings, organized committee that will go to city council meetings or to school board meetings or to county commissioners meetings. And when there is a group voice rather than a single voice, that group voice will have more listening than one single voice will. And that's why I am trying to see if I can organize a committee again that will be exclusively political, so that we can approach city councilmen at their meetings, so we can approach school board members at their meetings, so that we can approach county commissioners at their meetings with troubles or problems that's in our community. If I go alone right now, I probably won't have as much say-so or as much power in my backing than if I go with an entire committee or with the recommendation of an entire committee, and that the group knows that I am there representing so many people.
After the WrestleNita ended, you lost your job at the county as the road administrator. How did you make a living?
Well, I lost my job, I guess, two or three times due to politics. I believe the first one was, I lost them a couple of times that I forget now, but I believe the first one was at mental health. And it was because of change in administration and in city council, and I was supporting the losing party, so I got ousted from my job. And I forget what other job I started doing, but I survived. Then I was working also as the executive director for the Housing Authority, and I got ousted out of there when there was a change in administration also. And I was told explicitly that the only reason that I was being ousted was because they had their own director in mind, and they had nothing against me, but my party had lost the election, and I was being ousted. So I said, you know, I accepted and got out. I don't remember which jobs I took after being fired, but there were other jobs that were made available to me.
Well, I know that you also served on the Community Action Agency, the CAP board. I know you also served on the Council of Government. What was that like?
Well, in the Council of Governments, that's an area where it entails the whole. I believe it's a 9-county area. It's been some years since I've been in that committee or in that board. And that board receives the monies that is going to be disbursed in that 9-county area. And that board is the one that designates who is going to get what. Also, when there is monies available for our 9-county area, that board is the one that applies for those funds. And those funds are made available to the communities. And I was involved in that, I believe a couple of years in the Council of Government. And I was also, well, I forget all the boards that I was on, but in the 70s and 80s, I was involved in a lot of boards.
When did you start your business? Because you were in business by yourself with your wife now and your family. When did you start that? What do you do there?
Yes, we owned a video rental store here that we started in 1986. And at that time, me and my wife had been thinking of opening up a business, and we had never been able to because we didn't have the money. Finally, I got the courage to go ask the bank for a loan. And I approached the local bank here, Savala County Bank, and I knew that that they weren't going to loan me the money because, first, because I was a Mexicano, And it's hard for Mexicanos to get a business loan here, and it was at that time here in Zavala County, in the Zavala County Bank. After that, I went to the bank in Carrizo Springs, which had a loan officer which was Mexicano. So I went to talk to him, and I told him what I wanted to do. And he said, put it in form of a writing and bring it to me, and we'll talk about it. So I came back, sat down, started writing, and came up with a plan, and then went to present it to the board of directors of the Union State Bank. And they agreed, and they accepted that it was a good plan. And they had not much to lose, because I began with a loan of $25,000 to include the actual construction of the building. That was a total amount, $25,000. With those $25,000, I had to build the building and get my initial inventory in. So me and my brother and my wife, we started building the building, and we completed the building ourselves. And then we started buying the inventory, and we got started on my birthday, on May 15th, 1986. We started a video rental store. And luckily, that's what's been keeping us going. That's the only thing I do now. We operate our own business.
Well, I also know you have a food line, other than videos. So what's all that about it? When did that start?
Well, that was my wife's idea, actually. About 2 years ago, well, she said, well, you know what, we should try selling barbacoa. I don't know where she got the idea from, but she just came up with the idea of selling barbacoa. I said, well, there's a lot of people selling barbacoa here in Cristal already. I said, well, let's just give it a try and see what comes out of it. So we started selling barbacoa. I mean, we started on Sundays, and we started making, I believe, 20 pounds of barbacoa the first Sunday. Well, the first Sunday was just no good. You know, we almost had to eat all 20 pounds of barbacoa ourselves. The second Sunday, we sold a little bit more. We only had about, maybe 10 pounds left. The third Sunday, we didn't have any barbacoa left. And it started getting better and better and better. So today, we sell almost 400 pounds of barbacoa every Sunday. Every Sunday. Sometimes we run out. So that's another area that we got into. We hope to expand on it, but we don't have a precise plan yet, but we're thinking about expanding on that line.
That's a lot of work. How do you do that? When do you do it?
Well, we do it on every Saturday night. We start work at about 4 o'clock on Saturday, and finish up about 6:30 following morning. All through the night, we have to work with barbacoa. Then we get ready to serve by 7:30 in the morning.
Where do you do this?
We do it right here at home. Do it right here at home, and then we take it hot for a place of business.
Well, let me ask you about relations with Mexico. What are they like? How do Chicanos and Mexicanos get along? How should they be?
The relationship with Mexico. Well, I guess...
Don't fall down. The chairs.
I guess the relationship could be better. Could be better, but... I think what we see on the outside is... It's only a small reflection of what really is going on. I think that the whole thing is planned from the upper directors, because what's happening today is that for Mexicanos, Chicanos, and Mexicanos que vienen de Mexico are really not getting along. And that is because the Chicanos are being thought that Mexicanos are coming to take their jobs away. And that's what we're being thought, and that's what we're believing.
Is it true?
I don't believe so. I don't believe so. I think that Mexicanos today are like Mexicanos como mi papá y mi mamá. They came looking for a job, just to make a better living for their family. And there's nothing wrong in that.
Who do you think is the most effective Mexican-American leader today at whatever level?
The most effective Mexican-American leader today. Well, I would say the most effective leader today that has demonstrated, to me anyway, is Jose Angel Gutierrez. Other than him, it's another one that I admired a lot because he, and he passed away already, but so Cesar Chavez. He's also one of my idols, Cesar Chavez, because he worked for the migrant people and for the farm workers a lot. I think farm workers throughout the United States owe Cesar Chavez a whole lot.
Why is there an Anglo state representative representing this Mexican district?
Well, money has got a lot to do with it. Si se lanza, if a Chicano candidate comes along, and like for example, this last time around, the district judge that ran for election, and there's another lady by the name of Berain, last name of Berain, and another candidate that was running was Riojas, just as an example. Money was the biggest factor there. I supported the losing candidate, and as always, he had the least money. And if you cannot, today you need money to run a campaign.
That was David Riojas?
David Riojas. If you don't have money to run a campaign, you can't get things done today. It's not like before.
Which is the most effective Mexican-American organization today?
I'm not even going to start to say a question because I don't believe in the ones that are right now. I haven't seen something that's, you know, that satisfies me.
What is the most pressing issue or issues facing Mexican Americans today?
I guess education. Educating our young boys and girls so that one day we don't have to see any of our people going out to the fields anymore. And the only way we're going to do that and better our social life is through education.
Why do you think kids leave school?
Well, one, there's been a trend that Mexicanos leave school at early age. Just because they want to get out of school. But that's really not the case. In most of the cases, it's because there is not enough bread on the table. And when there is not enough money to live conveniently, you know, once a child or a boy or girl is old enough to be able to secure a job, they'll go secure a job rather than stay in school. And if there's not having enough money at the house, builds a lot of pressures. And if this young boy or girl sees those pressures every day, sees quarrels, arguments between mother and father because they don't have enough money for this, they don't have enough money for that, and they'll just get out of school and go to work. And that means they quit school, and that means that they don't go to college.
What are the relations like between Mexicanos, Chicanos, and blacks here in Crystal City?
Well, there's very few blacks in Cristal, and the relationship between Mexicanos and blacks, aquí en Cristal, it's beautiful, and there's no problem. The few blacks que hay aquí en Cristal, they all speak Spanish, just like me and you, they speak fluent Spanish.
What are relations like between Chicanos and Anglos today?
Well, I guess it's better, the relationship between Anglos and Chicanos in Cristal is better here in Cristal than the relationship between Chicanos and Anglos in Uvalde and Carrizo. And just because of the mere fact that there's not that many gringos here in Cristal anymore, there's very few. So they have to get along with Chicanos. The city council is Chicano, except for one Anglo. The county commissioners are Chicano, the school board members are Chicano. So they have been forced into getting along with us.
My last question, or second to the last question. In all of these years and all the things you've done, what are you most proud of?
Well, what I'm most proud of is my family. And I am proud to have been involved with Ciudadanos Unidos. I am proud to have been involved with La Raza Unida. I am proud to have been part of that history, that decade that will never be again. I am proud to have been part of that. I am proud that one day my family, my sons, my daughter, my grandson, will find my name somewhere in Cristal, in some flag, some book, some minutes of board meetings, and say that was my dad, or that was my granddad. I am proud of that, even though it had its cost. I had to pay my dues for that, but I am proud of that. I am proud to have been part of the biggest change in Cristal history, which was when Ciudadanos Unidos and La Raza Unida had its big revolt in the late 60s and 70s. I'm very proud of that. I am a very proud Chicano. I'm proud to be Chicano. I would not have it any other way.
Is there an area that you want to talk about that I did not ask you about or cover, or something that you want to say, because this is the last part, but then I want to talk to the son, son, see what he thinks about all this.
When I got into politics, I did it because I wanted to make my contribution. I wanted to make a change. I wanted something positive to come out of my efforts. And I think I did well. I am satisfied with myself. After I got out of politics, or out of being involved directly as a candidate or as an officer in board meetings or board, I decided that I wanted to make a less contribution. And I wanted it to be a family effort for our community. So my wife supported me in that idea, which was that we were going to build a gazebo downtown in Crystal City, and that we as a family were going to undertake that project, which we did. We started making fundraisers, my wife, myself, my son, my daughter, we started making fundraisers to gain the money to start building the gazebo. We made dances, we made tacos, we made all sort of plates until we finally reached the amount of money that we needed to build the gazebo. And we also approached the city council, the school board, and the county commissioners. The county commissioners came up with a donation, and the school board and the city council, they only supported the idea, but they didn't have the funds. However, we got the money that we needed to start the project, and we got that project built. And I am very happy and very proud to have made that a family project, because we had no assistance from anybody else other than our family. That was a family project, and we got it built between my wife, my sons, my daughter, and myself up to completion. When we completed it, we called the the news media, and we call the city council and the mayor, school board, commissioners, and we had a little gathering there at the gazebo, and we turned in the keys of the gazebo to the mayor, which accepted it for the city of Crystal City. To this date, you can see the elderly meet at that gazebo every morning. They'll be sitting there drinking coffee. And that was the spot that we decided that we wanted to build it in, because that's where the elderly would meet every morning and socialize. But there was nothing there but a bench. Now they have this gazebo where they can sit in and chat and drink coffee. And that's something that I feel proud of, because that was our project, that was our family project that made that happen.
Anything else, Mr. Mata?
No, I just thank you for allowing me this opportunity.
I want to thank you.